extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. David Goss here, and the glow-up is real. We're coming from Nantucket. We've got a star replacement on the back line in Jordan Angeli. This might be the all-star ETR of all time. How you guys doing?
Vibes.
Yeah.
Vibes only.
I should have worn a backward hat like Charlie.
You probably should have. For everyone that doesn't know, Charlie's literally wearing the Ash Ketchum hat from Pokemon. And as the show started, he turned it around, which means he's ready to battle. I hope people understand that reference. If you don't, that's fair. But Pokemon's been around for 30 years at this point.
I feel like
it should
knows.
Be able to land. Yeah. Are you guys excited for the show? Are you excited to have me guide you through this? I'm a little nervous, but I feel like if I play a wayward ball, you can both clean it up for me.
Yeah, well, I'll just clean it up and then Charlie can run around. You know, I'm excited. Always excited to be back here at Extra Time. And yeah, it's nice to be on this end. Last time I was hosting, so you get the heavy load today, Goss.
Yeah, you get to be the DP center forward alongside Charlie. I will do most of the work. You can run up top. We've got Tim Bezbachenko, president and GM of Columbus Crew, who will join us later so that Jordan can grill him individually. Me and Charlie don't even ask questions. It's just Jordan versus Bez the whole time. Just kidding. It's a great interview because obviously they made a record signing. We'll talk Open Cup semifinals. Most of them, we already know what's going to happen. Most of the quarterfinals in the books. We'll talk Canadian Championship semifinals as we roll along. And of course, we will preview all of the weekend that we're about to come to and some couple big news that dropped right here on this Thursday from All-Stars to All-Stars, actually, as everyone is involved with an All-Star game. So that is our show coming up from the AT&T 5G virtual studios. And let's get started with the big first piece of news. The 2023 MLS All-Star game presented by Target is headed to Washington, D.C. Audi Field will host their first ever All-Star game. We'll learn the opponent. We'll learn the exact time and date in the future. But it is going to be an epic moment. It is going to be something I think a lot of people in the D.C. area have waited for a while. Charlie, you are a former D.C. United player yourself. How excited were you to see this news?
Hyped. I was instantly hyped. The nation's capital, D.C. United, you're talking about history, coming back to the East Coast. I think this is going to be incredible. I think the city is going to embrace the All-Star game. So I just hope there's a lot of festivities around it. And, you know, this is the first one with Apple kind of behind the scenes. So I think this is just going to be an enormous event, which it should be. And so I'm excited. This also could be a possibility. I'm just going to throw it out there. Probably unlikely, but bring back the East-West game. Nation's capital, you know, the history, the East-West was one of the best moments for me as a kid is watching that All-Star game with the East and West because I had so many of my favorite players across the both conferences. So this could be an opportunity to bring that back. And man, what a reintroduction of that match.
But if they bring that back,
it would be a throwback for an OG club hosting. You're into it, Jordan?
If they bring the East-West back, do we have to bring penalty shots and the dribble up back as well, at least like as a part of the All-Star weekend, because that feels like a real homage.
Skills competition. Yeah.
It needs to happen. Let's we need it. To see the what five, current oh, the five players second. Do with that. Yes, exactly. The dribble up.
Yes. The 5 second like dribble from, was it 40 yards?
Too far. Yeah.
30.
Is it 30?
I think it was 30 yards. Yeah. I think it was 30.
Yeah.
One of the things I would steal from, I think the NBA does this well, is if we do that, you got to have like a legend from each club come back.
Done.
So that you have like Echeverry in the building. You have Tony Meola. I guess the goalkeepers probably wouldn't want to do it because that's less fun for them. But I would love to see some legends in the skills challenge. You know, that'll happen. There's going to be even more events that are going on, MLS Works events around this city. So that is for 2023. A lot of excitement. 2022 All-Star voting is already open. It closes at 11:59 p.m. Pacific time on July 1st.
And I've already picked my team. And I'm gonna let everybody know right now. So there's no debate, because Goss was like, did you put it out there on Twitter yet? And I said, no, I didn't, because when I went to do the link, it was not there. So for everybody out there, this is my starting 11 for the MLS All-Star game.
You want a drum roll?
Goalkeeper, Sean Johnson. Left back, Kai Wagner, Philadelphia Union. Alexander Kajens, left center back, New York City FC. Walker Zimmerman, Nashville. Alex Roldan from Seattle Sounders, right back. Ilya Sanchez, who's crushing it with LAFC, and LAFC are top of the supporter shield standing, starting defensive midfielder. Then Driussi and Heal as my two attacking midfielders. And I love how they make you pick a 4-3-3, a standard 4-3-3. One left back, one right back, so the outside backs finally get some love. Defensive midfielder, two midfielders, and then the front three, Castellanos, Ferreira, Jesus Ferreira, and Jeremy Boboci. So I think J-Bo and Ferreira are the two top goal scorers in MLS right now, and I think Tati Castellanos is just class. So I think that's my starting 11. What do you guys think? Would you add somebody? Would you take somebody off?
I'm just happy Castellanos is in the forwards group this year. Wasn't he a midfielder last year? I remember being so confused by that. So, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good lineup. I'm not ready to put my out there yet. I have a few days to do that.
Do you think I missed anyone?
I'm just gonna throw things out there. I think Aaron Long deserves a level of respect. Georgi Mihailovic is my MLS MVP right now. Luquinhas might be in that conversation as well. So maybe those are some players that deserve a level of respect. I think Seattle, you ended up with just Alex Roldan out of Seattle.
Yes.
I think that's fair right now.
They have underperformed. Yeah. I mean, let's be realistic.
But you're separating CCL from MLS play in your mind.
Yes, absolutely.
Because even with CCL, there were so many players that I feel like contributed, but it wasn't just like, okay, this person carried. Would you feel that? Unless it was...
No, I think you're right. I mean, Sao Paulo's obviously out,
yes,
so that changes a lot of it.
I would say too.
Yeah,
you couldn't.
I think
you couldn't put Rui.
I think Christian Roldan would be the other one, and then you get into what position does he play and how do you fit him into the team, right?
And I, of course, Anders, who is the Seattle Sounders legend in terms of supporters, there's probably not too many that eclipse him. He says Nico Ladero is ahead of Heal on a couple of key advanced stats. On the keyword is a couple, because the majority, Anders, is with Carlos Heal, and he's also the defending MLS MVP, and he is still consistently the best player on the pitch when he plays. So that's why he is still in the 11. But shout out to Nico Ladero, because he was my pick for MVP this year.
Okay.
I still stand Jose Martinez as well, and I think Philly's had a good year, even with all the draws. But let's dig into some actual soccer games here. Let's start with the U.S. Open Cup. Three quarterfinals this week. We still wait on one next week to figure out all our semifinals. Let's start with the cup set, baby. Let's start out west. Tuesday night, LA Galaxy hosting Sac Republic in Sacramento Republic. The first lower division team in a semifinals of an Open Cup since 2017, the first time in their club's history. They are third right now in the Western Conference in the USL. Now they're into a semifinal. Jordan, they're riding high, and they look built to be able to contend in this competition.
Well, what I like is their confidence coming into this. I saw Devin Kirk was on the call for the game, and he was talking to their coach before, and he tweeted out this question that he had for the coach, saying, like, there's been 400 plus U.S. Open Cup games, and only a couple of teams have made it into the semifinal from a lower division, and your team could do that. And the coach said, so we just have to win. Like, that, he's so focused on the win that it wasn't even like all the stats that mattered. I think that that confidence oozed into his team. You know, the goal early on wasn't just, okay, this is like a fluke goal. It was a well built up goal with some good movement off the ball. And then once you score early, they were hard to break down, and they probably knew going into this game, they weren't going to have a lot of the ball. They would have moments, especially against a Galaxy squad who hasn't looked great in their defensive structure, to counter them. And they took advantage. And it's saying something when you only let a team in MLS get four shots on goal against you, and they don't even score. You know, it's an own goal that ends up getting scored for Sacramento. So yeah, huge, huge for them. And it was an interesting one to take in.
I think a lot of that confidence comes from guys who have been there before, right? Matt LaGrosse has played in MLS. Luis Felipe's played in Cali Clasicos against his team. Douglas Martinez played for RSL. Roro Lopez. Like, you look at a group of players who, not just the quality is there in the way they play the game, but the belief that they belong at that level, I think, was there. And they sort of said it coming out of it of, we were ready for an intense quarterfinal game and the Galaxy just didn't seem to care like we did. And it didn't matter to them, Charlie, which takes me to Greg Vanney here, who was harsh in his post-game comments and sort of what happened to the LA Galaxy.
Well, he certainly should be. I mean, I give a ton of credit to Greg Vanney because of, you know, the person he is. And I look at the accolades, the championships he's won with Toronto FC and guiding that, I'd say, interesting dynamic within that TFC team. You come to LAFC because Los Angeles, your former club as a player, you know, it's one of the higher profile clubs across, it's probably the biggest profile club in Major League Soccer when it comes to the globe because of David Beckham. And the pressure's there. They gave up 2-3 goal games at home, losing to Houston, which I think caught everyone by surprise, because if you're playing the Houston Dynamo, they're not the team that screams success right now. They're still a work in progress. So I think that one kind of was one that shocked everybody across the league. And then they lost 3-1 at home to FC Dallas. And FC Dallas does have some game changers. I mean, Jesus Ferrer is playing the best of his career. And Paul Arriola looks like he's found a great home, a great place for him. But in terms of this team, when you watch the Galaxy, you are always underwhelmed. You are never watching this group with Chicharito and you know, Kevin Cabral and Grant Sear. And you look at some of the attacking talent and the pieces that they have, you go, oh, this team's going to be dangerous. They're going to be hitting teams on in the counter and transition, counterattacks, build up. But that's not the case. The back line has been atrocious. And that's just being real. They have not been good. And, you know, it's been, you know, that they've had games where it's looked okay, but for the most part, there's been no consistency with the back line. And that is the problem for this Galaxy team, is defensively. In this Open Cup game, I think that just showed really that the continuity, the timing, the decision-making is poor. It's really poor. And the quality, the goalkeeping was really struggled in this game. And so, unfortunately, the LA Galaxy have a lot of work to do to be considered contenders at this moment. So, you know, you want to see them bring in some players this summer, not so much, you know, you talk about the 10 position, but I'd say more importantly, you need to defend first, because you can't win games 5-4 and think that you're going to win MLS Cup. And a club like LA Galaxy is always trying to compete for MLS Cup. So they need to strengthen the team defensively and down the spine if they want to really compete, in my opinion.
I agree with you. And I would say it was, you know, they had a bulk of the possession, but every time Sacramento touched the ball in the attacking half, it felt dangerous. And as Jordan said, the intensity they played with, especially through Douglas Martinez and Roa Lopez, it felt like Galaxy were scrambling at every moment that Sacramento was on the ball, even though the goal comes out of an innocuous moment. And Jonathan Klinsmann probably could have done better on that long shot from Luis Felipe. So Sacramento headed to a semifinal.
Shout out to Roro Lopez, because we go way back with the youth national team, always super talented. And it brings me so much joy to see him still playing the game and still having success. And, you know, he deserves a lot of credit just for how hard he's worked and for him to still be able to be in a position to have some success.
It's every career is different, but he will be synonymous with a club, which is unique for people. He started Sacramento Republic. He is the face of Sacramento Republic. He always will be. So it's a really cool career for him, and a great goal and a great moment. You will know when you listen to this show if they are hosting or traveling to Kansas City for their semifinal. We do not know it yet. Let's jump to the East for a second here. Red Bulls 3-0 win over NYCFC, the top two teams in the East. Hudson River Derby. Goals, red cards. This game literally had everything, and I was here for all of it. So now the Red Bulls move on after the 3-0 win. And the question we got from a fan here, and Matt Skinner for you, Jordan, is, are the Red Bulls serious Open Cup contenders? And what pieces do they still need to be considered dangerous for a late season MLS Cup?
Cup contenders? Absolutely. Especially with performances like that. And I do feel like everybody knows who the Red Bulls are and what their identity is. And it seems to me that that's kind of built for a win and move on type of scenario, because they're going to bring everything, give it all, and make other teams uncomfortable. I think one of the things that makes them most dangerous, the longer a game goes without a goal, like if they don't give up a goal for, I think the first goal in this game was like in the 50th. Yeah.
55th. Yeah. Something like that.
If they go that long, they just start wearing the opponent down. And it seemed like things started to connect. They're one of the best teams when it comes to how they've built their spine. So going to that second half of the question, I don't know how much they need to change, because you have Cornell and Long and Caceres and Amaya have been good. And then I would even say the spine of this team, guys, is Luquinhas and Morgan, because sometimes they play really narrow. And one of the best things about the Red Bulls, and I think the most dangerous part, is they attack centrally and they'll go straight at teams through the gut of the field. And whether they win it or lose it, they have people there to counter press, win it back, and then and go after it. So I think they're built well. I can't think of anything right now that's going to, you know, could they get a center forward who scores more goals? Yeah, probably. But is that?
Yeah, 1,000%. Yeah, is
that? I don't know how likely that is. Do you think that's a likely move? Right. I don't.
I mean, they've already spent a DP exactly. spot on a center forward, right? So, and they've also brought in Ashley Fletcher. So it doesn't seem like there's a ton of cap flexibility, Charlie, to bring in another center forward, unless you want to.
What I'm saying is that's the one part of the field where they could use a game changer to kind of put them in the conversation of, okay, real MLS Cup contenders. Cause they're a playoff team, no doubt. But I think because they lack that prototypical goal scorer, you know, the Bradley Wright Phillips, I mean, obviously that's lightning in a bottle, but if you can get someone who is a little bit more consistent, cause their goals are coming from Lewis Morgan and Luquinhas, and they've been fantastic. That is, those two players, those two signings have really transformed this club and give them a lot of success. But the moments where they hurt you is in transition, right? In the open field, because of the way that the style that they play. But if they had a nine who was a little bit more proficient and someone you can play off of and who's a real goal scorer, then I'm saying this Red Bulls team can beat anybody on any given day. And I think that they'd be more prone to success if they had that player.
It did feel like in this game, too, one more thing, is they're kind of good at the extracurriculars. Like, Tolkien really baited Thiago into that one and kept his calm, which is interesting because they're such a fiery team. Like, they bring a lot of energy. But how much does Edwards affect them in the next – did he get a red after the – it looks like he got a red card. Did I miss that after the game?
Oh, did he? After the final whistle?
I thought I saw a red here. Yeah, so they're not going to have him next game. What does that look like, especially when you're talking about a win, you know, a semifinal? And he's been good with them with those two other center backs. So,
yeah. Yeah, it is. It's interesting. They do walk that line pretty hard. Charlie, I get what you're saying. I would push back on the term play off of, because I actually think what Klamala and Barlow does create the openings that Lewis Morgan and Luquinhas are able to take advantage of. But if they were dangerous as nines and taking attention away, then that would make Luquinhas' and Morgan's life easier as well. They travel to LAFC on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern time on ABC. So obviously a huge matchup to show, one, their depth, their flexibility to bounce back after this game, and two, to show that they could be that MLS Cup contender against the top team in the Western Conference. I want to switch over to NYCFC because they play Philly at 6 p.m. on FS1 on Sunday as well. And Jordan, you mentioned the Red Bulls sort of walking that line. NYCFC didn't. They fell right over that line. They were all over the referee from the opening whistle. They were surrounding him. Chanot's complaining in the post game. And obviously, Thiago Andrade gets the red card. Sean Johnson's on the field pulling guys back after it's over. Charlie, do you worry at all about NYCFC now in the post-Ronnie Dyla era?
I don't in terms of performance, because with Tati Castellanos leading this team, they have a lot of depth. This team will be still very difficult to break down and beat. However, I don't think Tati Castellanos will still be here. I think when you have your manager leaving mid-season because he wants to get back to Europe, Standard Liège, that I think that sends a message to the other players. All right, now's my time to leave, because if my manager's leaving, then surely they're going to let me leave as well. And I've been saying from the start of last year that Tati Castellanos just keeps getting better, and he's so effective in this league. He can hold up the ball. He can beat you on the dribble. He can score in the air, on the ground, in the box, outside of the box, great in combination play. There's a market for him. I mean, he almost can fit in every league. I could see him having a lot of success in Serie A and La Liga, to be honest. Portugal, playing in Portugal for one of the top clubs. So I could see him leaving. And if he leaves, I don't see New York City FC competing for a trophy. Because he really is the game changer for this group. Yeah. Now, maybe they feel confident in Tyus Magno to come in and be that guy, but he's a different type of player. I feel that, you know, maybe he can rise to that level like Tati did, because I think he had to grow from his first couple of years at New York City FC. But if they lose him, that they're not going to be in the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Just with that, didn't you feel like Eber was there and then Tati kind of grew and that shifted. So maybe Tyus Magno is growing and that shift will be something that will happen. One thing I found interesting, guys, is did you hear Nick Cushing say, like, we can't change a lot of what we're doing, which means to me, like, he wants to change some of what New York City is doing. Why would you want to change? They are the best when it comes to executing game plans. This team is the best in MLS. I found that very strange. Is he calling you to tell you?
The buzzer thought it was strange. Yeah, the buzzer thought it was strange as well.
I would say the only reason you would have to change is due to the manager. Mm. So if a manager comes in and maybe wants to play a certain way, then you have to go out and find players to change that into that system, right? However, I think you would only sign a manager who is comfortable playing this system with the current group of players that they have, because they have so much depth that you don't have to go out and sign all these players. You maybe have to sign one to fill the shoes of Tati Castellanos.
I remember having this conversation with Caleb Porter, actually, after Greg Berhalter, where it's like, you have to change things because you're different, but what you're coming in was working and at a really high level. So how do you? And he ended up winning MLS Cup after 2 years. So mm-hmm. Domi Torrent had to do the same after Patrick Vieira. Ronnie Dyla had to do the same after Domi. But it is hard to say how he can go and do that. I do find it interesting that the story last year was, can NYCFC keep their mentality in big mm-hmm. knockout games, right? Because they had lost to TFC when they were favorites. They had lost to Atlanta. And then now you look at the Seattle series and this game, and it feels like they lost control in those big moments, which they had disproven against the Revs in Philly and Portland last year. So it's been a very interesting sort of swing with them for NYCFC. We'll look to see what they can do against Philly Union, who are a similar matchup to the Red Bulls for them. That one, 6 p.m. Eastern time on FS1 and Fox Deportes. Sporting KC, the other winners last night in the quarterfinals of the Open Cup, knocking off Union Omaha 6-0. Obviously a big scoreline. Shout out to Union Omaha. They were the story of this tournament, the Cinderella, the USL League One team. Their fans brought it in KC. It was neon yellow everywhere. The KC fans were complimenting them. That's how great that atmosphere was. But for Sporting KC, Charlie, when you look at this, how big a deal is this semifinal appearance and potentially a cup run here in 2022? Would be
2022. It's massive considering where Sporting Kansas City are. They're in league play, nightmare. Could you salvage it? You could with a cup, with a trophy. This is always that. Yeah, we didn't do this so well, but we got this shiny object right here. This is the cup that we won. So literally your season is going to be chalked up to, can you win the US Open Cup? Cause it's been so bad in Major League Soccer. And we know how things can change. You get a player in the summer that can change things around. Maybe a couple in Sporting Kansas City's case. They need a few. I don't anticipate that happening. So you really have to put all your eggs in this one basket, which is US Open Cup.
Now, reminder that they won a huge Open Cup round of 32 game against Dallas, which felt like a changing moment. And then they went and lost to Portland 7-2 that weekend. So I think Jordan Morris, yeah. Freddie Montero, and Christian Roldan might be licking their lips because they host Sporting KC on Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern time on ABC. Sporting KC also officially signing William Agata from Hapoel Yerushalayim, which we've talked a bit about, a 22-year-old striker. This feels, again, like they're trying to get younger. They signed 3 under-22 players in this offseason to sort of fill in at left back, center back, and winger. They sometimes play, not that much. So maybe it'll be different here with William Agata. But congrats to Sporting KC, to their fans, and they will know when this show comes out if they're hosting or traveling for an Open Cup semifinal. Either way, sounds like a great time. I wish that I could be there. Let's move up to Canada. The semifinals already done in the Canadian Championship. We are headed to a final. The Vancouver Whitecaps will host Toronto FC sometime in July. This is a big moment for the Vancouver Whitecaps. It's a big moment for, I think, both these coaches, Jordan. When you look at Vanni Sartini in year two and Bob Bradley in year one, what would winning this competition mean for those two guys?
Well, yeah, it's been a rough beginning to the season. Vancouver has turned it around much more than Toronto has as of late. It would mean a lot. I think especially, you know, Toronto has been the team to win this in the last few years. So I think for Vancouver, it might mean a little bit more just knowing that they can take down who, you know, Toronto over the last handful of years has been that giant really in Canadian league play. So, but at the same time, no matter which team wins, I do think it's a big confidence booster because Toronto is doing it maybe with a lot of young players and what they're doing and getting some of these young players, not only MLS experience, but experience in these knockout games is only going to be beneficial to them later on down the road, whether that means those players stay or they sell those players. So it's going to be a big game for both teams, but gosh, you got to give props to Vanni Sartini. That guy just is a gem in this league when it comes to head coaches.
Here's his quote from after the game yesterday, as he always does. He said, "The gems come true and true." This one from the Hard Journalist, who does as good a job covering Vancouver Whitecaps as anyone out there. And she writes, quote, "Italians from Vancouver don't come here to support Insigne. We don't care about Insigne. Oh, let's support the Whitecaps. It's going to be hard, but I'm telling you right now, we have a 51% possibility to win that game because we play at BC Place." It feels like it should be higher than 51% if you're hosting the final, but I guess his point is they are favorites. It's theirs to lose. Charlie, this game will be played post Insigne arriving in Toronto. How excited are you for a final to see, you know, this Cavallini, Ryan Gold, now we see Andre Kubas and that Vancouver team under Sartini against Insigne and Bob Bradley's Toronto?
Well, I think in terms of Vancouver, it seems like they've started to turn things around there because it was a poor start to the season. But now they've started to pick up these small victories and they've built some momentum. So I love the fact that Cavallini is the reason why this team is starting to get results, because he's doing what they brought him in to do, which is score goals. Be somebody who's going to be up there fighting for balls and score those decisive goals to get us points. He's doing that, which results in them picking up points. On the opposite side, TFC, they've struggled this year. They've been so inconsistent. The back line in particular, goalkeeping in the back line has been problematic. And so, you know, Insigne is great. Another game changer in the attacking third. But again, that doesn't help you defensively. Yeah. You know, maybe teams have to drop off a little bit more because you have a couple of players who can break you down. But defensively, this team is not going to go anywhere if they don't improve defensively. And so Vancouver have a strong, you know, possibility of bringing home the silverware because of just the back line of TFC has underperformed.
Just like overall, can I ask a question about like Chicago brings in Shaqiri and Toronto brings in Insigne? And it seems kind of like the same signing for both teams who are struggling. Do you feel like Insigne is going to hit more than Shaqiri has hit in Chicago? I know Shaqiri has been good, but like it hasn't equated to goals and wins. And
I would say Shaqiri has definitely not lived up to the signing.
But is it him or is it the people around him? That's what I'm saying in this question.
I'd say it's both. It's a combination. But, you know, Kasper Schumacher was brought in to score goals and he's looked like, you know, a ghost. I mean, really not influential. So I think that has failed. And Philadelphia Union, on the flip side, have improved up top, probably not to where they had hoped, but it's been an improvement. So Chicago Fire have not been able to, you know, put pieces around Shaqiri to allow him to really, you know, be that much more influential in the attacking third in creating for others. Because it seems like everything has to go through him and he has to be the finisher as well. So he's underperformed, I'd say, considerably all the hype that came with that signing. So I'd say Insigne is in a good place to have a little bit more success in the attacking third because Toronto have some players. I mean, just in Jimenez himself has scored, you know, a good return for that signing. I think that's been a good signing for TFC. So, and Akinola, I think he's still working his way back up to form. So they have some weapons. Chicago Fire do not. And so they need to, I mean, they were, I think what they have four straight 0-0 draws
to start the season.
To start the season. I mean, you have Shaqiri and you're going 0-0, 0-0, 0-0, 0-0. You can't, it's almost like we're just going to defend and hope. That's not a real tactic for success. So I would say Insigne has a better opportunity, a better chance to hit the ground running.
Iowa Akinola looked good against Montreal. Mm-hmm. I think he had two of the four goals in their 4-0 win over Montreal in this one. We have a question from at Dave, the chairman. Love that name. Don't really know what it means, but appreciate any David who's at the top of anything like King David, David Melech. Let's go. He says it's only been two games. Montreal have looked extremely toothless without Georgi Mihailovic. With him out for the next month at least, how worried are you guys for the foot club, is what he calls them.
I'm a little worried because they haven't been good without him. And I do think the ascension that we've seen of Georgi this year has created just an aura around this team that every team, nobody could figure out how to defend Georgi. And that was really the question when we would talk about the games every weekend is, if you're playing Montreal, well, how are you going to deny Georgi in trying to affect this game? And teams weren't good at it. So then when you take that out, it was really, where else is that coming from? And we're seeing that there, it's not really coming from many other places, but you know, it's not as if they're not creating chances. Even over the weekend, like Kai Kamara could have had a couple of easy goals. So they're there. It's just, you know, when you don't have that confidence oozing out of you because one of the best players this year in the league isn't playing, it's difficult to find that momentum again.
I think he had a goal and assist when they played Charlotte a couple of weeks ago. That's who they host on Saturday. With the lineup they put out in Canadian Championship, that has to be 3 points. It seems like that was the focus, so they better get that job done on Saturday. That one available on ESPN. Plus, that takes us into a couple of news and notes going on here on a Thursday afternoon. Big news out of Minnesota, the host of the 2022 MLS All-Star Game presented by Target. Adrian Heath has been given a contract extension by Minnesota United. This extension takes him through the 2024 season. So 2 years added to his, what we know, at least time in Minnesota. His career record, 71, 79, and 38 draws all time with Minnesota. He is the only coach in Minnesota United MLS history. Obviously, 2019 Open Cup final where they went and lost to Atlanta. And then, of course, then in 2020, they went to the Western Conference Finals, where they had the lead and gave it up and then ended up losing to the Seattle Sounders. We got a lot of questions in our mailbag about this once it dropped. Charlie, let's start with you. What's your reaction and thought to Adrian Heath being given an extension in Minnesota at a time when they currently sit 11th in the Western Conference so far through this season, but only 2 points off a playoff spot?
Yes, of course. Let's start with me. You know,
Jordan, I'll see you later. We'll both head out.
Yeah, seriously. No, I think what Adrian Heath has done, you know, when you look at the start, 2017, finished 9th out of 11. 2018, 10th out of 12th in the Western Conference. So back-to-back poor seasons. It would be very easy to say, we're pulling the plug on Adrian Heath. See you later. Thanks for coming. They said, we're sticking with him. In that 2019 season, they get into the playoffs. They're 4th out of 12 positions in the Western Conference. Great. They lose to LA Galaxy. Then 2020, which would be the pinnacle for Adrian Heath and Minnesota United, and they get to the conference final. They win the playoff game. They're 4th, but they were only 5 points from first place to finish that season in the Western Conference. That right there is proof in the pudding that we're gonna back the coach that we believe in, and he's eventually gonna get us to where we want to go. But then here's the decline. 2021. They're in the playoffs, but they lose the first round. You would want to see them build off of that momentum. And then this year has been very poor. And then I look at more in particular the signings that he's made. You look at the 9 position. It's been flop, 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 floppity flop. And so you think about, man, this team has had so much potential, yet they haven't been able to get over the hump. But what this extension tells me again is we still believe in Adrian Heath to get us back to where we were in 2020. Do I agree with this extension coming right now? Probably not. I would wait till the season finishes or is close to finishing to see if does this team rebound after the summer transfer window. Are they back on track? Because if they still are in the bottom 4 or 5 in the Western Conference, then I think you have your answer. That, you know, these sometimes we've seen if a coach is at a club for too long, it gets stale. That's just realism. You can win an MLS Cup and it can go stale in a couple of years. We've seen that. So I think for me, I don't think this is a great extension in terms of timing. But I get that they believe in Adrian Heath and they think they can get the club back to where it was in 2020. But I think that the timing is off.
So we don't really hear normally contract year. So I didn't know this, but I guess by doing the math, that means Adrian Heath's contract was up this year. Mm-hmm. So it does take him out of being a lame duck coach. One, going into the transfer window, when how well are you going to convince players to come play for you if they don't know you're going to be there? And also internally in the locker room, we've seen coaches often struggle to sort of rally a locker room when it's unsure if they are the one that the ownership believes in coming down. So that sort of adds up to some of the timing, except Jordan, as Charlie goes through it and mentions, they are not currently a playoff team and it has not gone up since 2020.
Well, I would say too, what happens if they finish bottom of the Western Conference this year?
Right.
Do you say, oh, we just gave him an extension and now we're going to relieve him of his duties? What message is that, you know, in terms of players on the team and fans and supporters? So I get the whole maybe players are going to doubt him. Then you would say, well, he's not the man to lead if players are going to not follow him. Right. So that's I guess that's the point I'm making. And then on top of that, there's no other team that's going to poach him because he hasn't delivered. So you don't have to worry about another team within MLS saying, hey, we want to sign you, Adrian Heath, because that's just not the reality. So you don't have to make the signing because there's no demand for Adrian Heath. So Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how things play out this year.
I think Gausso is talking, too, about bringing players in this transfer window. And I don't know if Minnesota is in that boat where they are looking to bring players in. They probably could use some players to help them in attack. But if you don't know who the head coach is at the end of the year, are you going to sign a DP to a 3-year contract when the coach can change in 6 months? I don't know. I think that's what Goss was saying. Charlie, I agree with everything that you're just saying, especially just the timing seems strange to me, because there's leverage for both clubs for both parties at the end of the year. If Adrian Heath does well, he signs a better contract at the end of the year than he might sign right now. If he gets this team that is not in the playoffs into the playoffs and competing, then he can say, I want more money, which I would think would be the better way to go. The question for me is, you know, when you talk about Adrian Heath and you gave the numbers about wins, draws, losses, but Charlie mentioned all the players that haven't hit there. Well, that's a lot of players that haven't hit. Why? Why are those players not hitting is my question. What is not working in that club enabling players to be brought in to be successful? We know Reynoso is successful and carries this team a lot of the time, but there have been players, Hunu, Fragapane, that have been brought in to do some big things and haven't really been there.
Now, every player at this point is an Adrian Heath player, so I think people in the Adrian Heath camp would push back and say Metzenaer, DeBassi, Dane St. Clair, Hassani Dotson, Kervin Arriaga, Robin Ludd. All of these are also players he brought in as well. It does feel like, though, that DP level signing, that higher echelon outside of Reynoso, that is where this club has struggled. And we'll see what happens going forward. I'm sure they would love to spend $10 million on a center forward, a 23-year-old out of the Premier League. They did not do that, but one team did. The Columbus Crew did. And we now get a chance to talk to Tim Bezbachenko, the president and GM for our AT&T 5G call to the field. What's up, Bez?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
So we knew you really wanted to come on ETR, so you made this signing. So let's get to it right off the bat, because we know that's why it happened. Cucho Hernandez, that's the big story this week. That's what we're going to be talking about. Tell Crew fans a little bit about what they're getting and sort of who this person and this player is.
Yeah, just the basics, 23-year-old Colombian playing for Watford in the English Premier League, plays centrally and out wide, quick, agile, dynamic player who has a penchant for individual moments of brilliance, right? He can be a difference maker, and I think that's something that caught our eye was not just ability to connect with his teammates in his game intelligence, but, you know, there are certain times during matches where he can separate from a defender and score from distance or you know, an acrobatic play. A couple of his goals that I think some of our fans maybe have seen if they watch the Premier League, you can see that he's creative and he finds ways to put the ball in the back of the net. So for us, it was, you know, in a lot of ways, a no-brainer. You don't know if you can get it over the line, and we can get into that. But it really exciting for our fan base, for our city, for our club, our ownership group, and I think the league, because I think this profile is something a little bit unique. You know, I think we've had different eras. I know you all talk about kind of our identity as a league, and I think our profiles that we're able to go after is changing and evolving. I think that's a great thing for our league.
Well, Tim, you touched on it, the profiles you're going after. I'm curious to know, how did you find Cucho Hernandez? How big is your scouting network and kind of what goes into finding these types of players?
Yep. Wasn't me. It was our team. Okay. Our team. You got to. You know, it was Neil McGinnis, our head of scouting, and Issa Tall, assistant GM, and our networks and scouts around the world, right? We don't have as many as City Football Group, but we do have certain people fully employed by the Crew down in South America, a couple in South America, a few in Europe, and then you're relying on contacts. So our scouts are watching film in all the leagues, and we're collecting data on many leagues. And they produce a number of players. But when you look at a profile like Cucho, it's more about the club maybe being relegated, not being able to afford the players' salary anymore. And so there's a list of players that maybe become available because of those reasons that we also put into sort of our process. And through our contacts, Neil and Issa, we're able to get on with pretty early on in the spring and at least understand that there might be an opportunity to make a play at them.
This feels like a different signing when you're talking about MLS. And you've been around some really big signings in MLS, whether it's Giovinco in Toronto or Zellerayan, even with the Crew.
Those weren't that big.
But here, Fez, you know, this is something where you mentioned earlier, your leagues or clubs in MLS are now able to compete with the top five leagues in the world, which is the next step, the next level. Why is that possible? Why is that the case now? And what is allowing clubs like the Columbus Crew and other clubs in MLS to be able to compete like that?
You know, I've talked about it with ownership and some people over the last few days talking about Cucho. I think it's the project, it's the people, and it's the league. And the project starts with our club and our ownership being ambitious and saying, not only are we going to keep the team in Columbus, not only are we going to build a new stadium and a brand new training ground in Lower.com Field, Ohio Health Performance Center, not only are we going to go out and trade for Nagby, massive trade internally, and then go out and spend for Zellerayan, but we want to keep on reaching higher, pushing harder. And I think that's different than we've seen in Columbus in the past. I think it's been a club, a historic club. Everyone knows it's the first soccer specific stadium, which is a great storyline, but we want to move past that. We've had a lot of first in for the Crew in our history, and it's great, but we want to be known for trophies, for pushing the envelope, for doing things new, for being innovative. And eventually, and we can get to that later, you know, development. We're behind in some ways, but where we don't need to be behind is going out and acquiring top talent, giving Caleb and our coaching staff the support they need. So certainly starts with the project, and we have a great project here in Columbus. The people, you know, it's from the coach all the way down to our staff. You know, you talk to a player before you sign, certainly at this level, and there's a connection, and they buy into the project, but they also buy into the people. And I'm fortunate enough to be surrounded by great people, and Caleb, Neil, Issa, Corey, Ray, Jamie McMillan. I mean, Mark Nichols, our whole leadership team was involved in at a level when you're signing a player at this level. So it does take an entire club to get it over the line. Not all players do, but when you're looking at a player of this level, it does take a whole group to attract it and to explain the project. And then the last thing is the league. You guys know all this, the league's growing, the profile's changing. Even when you talk to owners and sporting directors at other clubs like Watford, Gino Pazzo, who owns Watford and Udinese, they know about MLS now. A few years ago, they did, but they didn't know that if we could sort of play in the sandbox with them. But now when you sit down with them, they know our players, especially our young players, and they're ready to talk and they're willing to listen. And I think those three things allowed us to acquire a player.
Tim, this caliber. I'm curious, how much do you put into the analytics of the game when you're scouting players? And obviously you've had so much success when it comes to Giovinco and Zellerayan in particular, massive hits. Do you rely on that experience, or is it as the game changes and more information is available, are you putting more stock into analytics when you're making these signings?
We use analytics heavily in the process. I think a lot of times at the beginning of the process to filter the list down, we typically will start with 100 and use analytics to narrow it down to maybe 40 to 50 players. Then we assign the scouts games, and they'll watch games and create a template. And, you know, you understand what their tendencies are as you get the descriptions, you know, in phrases. And it's really important because they articulate the game more than it can show up in numbers. And then when you get down to your final list, then you go back to the numbers. So I would say it's a process that kind of goes back and forth between the two. It's certainly just a part of the process, but it is integral to making sure you're getting the player that you think your eyes are seeing. And the only thing I would add to that is now you can acquire data, the physical data. This is something that's relatively new over the last 2 years, is our ability to acquire the physical data at multiple leagues. And so if you're a forward, if you're looking for a striker or a defensive midfielder, you can match up the physical needs and requirements of MLS to a player. And I think that's, again, that's a game changer for us to be able to increase our strike rate, right? It's hard to get a player that does really well in MLS. Our league is much better than most people think. And part of that is because of the physical element of our league.
I want to bring back to the crew on the field, and you mentioned what it's need to, you know, what it takes to win in this league. Jesse Zardes had helped you do that in the past, and he has obviously put up some big numbers. His trade has been a big conversation for us on this show and people around the league. Obviously, now we start to see the full picture with Cucho Hernandez come into the fold. I guess, when did you ID the need to upgrade at that position, and sort of what was the internal conversation that needed to happen?
I'll be careful not to say upgrade, because Jossie is such a massive person at this club, great, great family, great player. As we look at it, we look at sort of the cycles of the roster, and there's times, the appropriate time to do things, and him coming out of contract at the end of the year, we knew at the beginning of the year in preseason that there's a chance that we wouldn't re-sign him and that other teams were interested in him. Also, let's not forget Miguel Berry had a very good year last year in the limited minutes that he had. So we thought there was some ability to have some cover there. And so we started to listen to clubs in the offseason. There was significant interest in a player like Jossie, given his background with the U.S. men's national team, his character. So to answer your question, it was, you know, February, March when we initially started talking. I think we did not want to do something then. I think it was more April, May, June. But we did have an idea at that point that sort of after the first 5-6 games of the year that we needed to open up the slot, the DP slot, and not have that as an obstacle that we would have to get over in order to sign a DP. Unfortunately, I've had the circumstances where I've signed 4 DPs twice, and I've had to offload one. And, you know, obviously, I love our league, but the rules, you know, are
difficult,
complicated, and sometimes frustrating. And I would love to sign more than 3, but when you have 4, then you lose all leverage. And so in this scenario, given the offer that came, we felt like it was a good one, good enough, and then it allowed us to freely negotiate, because if he was still on our under contract and on our team at the time, it just puts us in a hard position, and it really does affect the culture around the club. And we wanted to treat Jossie in a way that was respectful, and he could play a part in the decision. And we came in and we sat down with him and had a conversation with him and his agent, Rich Motzkin. And so, you know, we're getting to the place in MLS where we want to certain. All players, you want to treat them a certain way, but certainly a guy like Jossie.
100%. And I know the roster is always evolving in Major League Soccer. Where would you say your squad is right now? And could we expect any more signings coming into the team this summer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I think we have a strong roster. I don't think we fully realized that potential yet and really gotten the confidence, right? We know, especially in Major League Soccer, where everyone has roughly the same amount of money, sans the DP. It's a grind. I mean, the Eastern Conference is extremely competitive. And, you know, you might be a couple games behind in the standings or even just games played. And maybe you have 2 games on the road and that can present a challenge. And you're actually not as far behind as you in reality could be. So I think we're with Cucho's signing, I think we have a very good roster, and I think we have an ability to climb the standings quickly, and that's what we'll be trying to do. That said, we're always looking at how do we bring the young players in, and then where are there opportunities maybe on the wing to get production. And we have Kevin Molino coming back. He's looking really good. I know he's someone that a lot of people have forgotten about, but don't count Kevin Molino out. He's had some of his best years and times coming off these injuries, and he's confident, and fingers crossed that he maintains his health. But we, you know, Aiden Morris recently has really come on, and I'm excited to potentially get Sean Zawatsky into the mix, another homegrown player. So the roster is always evolving, Charlie, but I think it's in a good place, especially with this signing.
You know, we're never forgetting about Kevin Molino. I had 3 ACLs too, so I'm like on that Kevin Molino train all the way, rooting for him. But what I find interesting, Tim, is the same week we're talking about this big $10 million signing is also the same week that two Crew 2 players get their debut with the first team, with Jason Russell Rowe and Muhammad Farsi over the weekend. And there's a lot of growth when it comes to academy players getting opportunities with Crew 2. But you mentioned earlier, you feel like you're a little behind in some places too as a club. So overall, you know, the project at Columbus, where do you feel like you guys are at, and what are maybe some of those areas of growth?
Mm-hmm. Well, we always start, or the last 3 years have been focused on the first team and building a stadium and training ground and making sure we're competitive, obviously won a championship, but how do we maintain that level of success? And so some of it is going out and getting the Lucas Zelarayans. The next is doing it again. And I think that this really solidifies us in this mix of clubs that are looking to acquire multiple DPs. You know, it is a $10 million transfer fee, but it we were able to spread it fairly evenly over 3 years. So it, from a cash perspective, we're not even inside the top 10 of MLS. And I think that's where the sophistication of our league's coming along, is where you can structure deals that work out for your club in the right way so that you're not blowing your budget, right? So on the top end, it's to commit and continue to make good trades and continue to focus on how are the DPs working together. But as you mentioned, I do think we're a little bit behind, if I'm honest, because of the transition of ownership. We had started to wind down our academy because the owners were leaving back in sort of 17, 18, 19. We actually lost a couple teams. So we've added them back in. And then the second step was to add Crew 2. So now we've filled in the gap. And frankly, having come from Toronto, they did that 8 years ago. So there's a number of players who have on other teams who started their second team eight years ago who have, you know, some guys have 100 games under their belt. And we've seen that right around the 50 game mark, that's where players really start to break in, maybe even fewer, but we didn't have that until this year. And now you see Crew 2 with Laurent Courtois, what Corey Ray has done with that roster, and Jason Russell Rowe and Mo Farsi, for example, great finds by Corey with his Canadian background. Jason Russell Rowe joined Toronto when we were 13, and for whatever reason, they didn't sign him to a, you know, first team contract. So you work it out where, you know, what is a benefit for TFC because they get trade value, and then it's a benefit for the Crew. And I think that's where this homegrown space that you're going to see go to is once it all opens up, there's enough players for, you know, there's a lot of players, I should say. And so if a team like who's really focused on the youth, like Philadelphia or Dallas, if they have too many players that are lined up and not enough slots and playing time, then they will look to move that player and do right by the player. And I think that's what's great about our league, and we're excited about it. But we have some, we're a couple years behind bringing in Mark Nichols, 8 years, 8, 9 years in Seattle, technical director of Charlotte, and his expertise. You know, we met in the EFCL course back in the very first year when I was at the league office. Helped launch that with Todd Durbin and Fred Lipka, and Mark Nichols was a star a candidate on that course. Always wanted to work with him, so the opportunity came, and I said, "Hey, we gotta jump on that to bring Mark."
Tim, one last question for me. You know, there's a lot of current players who listen to the Extra Time podcast, and current, you know, or former players. Most players ask me, you know, do you know someone who could give me some insight? So I would love to hear from you. How do you become successful in your role? You obviously have had so much success, an abundance of success. What should players be thinking about as they, you know, get closer to the end of the road as a player to make sure that transitions a little bit cleaner and easier to find a path to success like you did?
You know, it's every individual is different, but I will bring in a conversation I had with Pipa when we were talking about Higuain. We were talking about, you know, his career as it shifted beyond soccer, and I just talked about how your day is going to change, and the number of hours you work, and the respect that you have. Just as players, you know, we're trying to make sure that all the players have what they need to perform on Saturday. Well, when you're a regular employee, unfortunately, not everyone treats you exactly like a player. So that's news for hopefully you're treated a certain way and I'm treated a certain way just in my position. So that's a reality that I think a lot of people don't fully appreciate and absorb. Then the other thing I said, you have to learn some basic skills like emailing and, you know, how to schedule your day on Outlook and respond to people in email in the right way. I mean, there's certain etiquette and customs around the office and around even a training ground that you maybe don't pick up as a player. And I know that's sort of elementary items, but they're often overlooked and they can kill people in their careers because they don't know the basics of how to work around an office. And then look, hard work. It's no longer 2 hours, 4 hours a day. You know, and I know a lot of players put in 8 hour work days these days, but it is weekends. You're traveling. It is at nighttime. And if someone, you know, your boss emails you or the president or our ownership, in my case, I'm responding and it's not on your terms. So you kind of lose control of your day in a way that maybe you had previously when you were a player. So those are some basic elements. But there's a whole lot more to it. Obviously.
I love it.
Yeah.
I appreciate Charlie opening up a can of worms that could be a second podcast on the final question of the interview with the president and GM of Tim Bezvichenko. Next time we'll dig into your USL career, right? We'll see where you stand.
No, please don't. It's very short. It allowed me to relate to our Crew 2 players, is what I said. Yeah,
that's perfect. And obviously, they've been successful. One of the best in MLS Next Pro. So you've got that going for you there. And obviously, the first team looking to follow that success. Cucho Hernandez now in the fold. We'll see him in July. We're really excited about it. Tim, we appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. Thank you, as always. We always appreciate talking to Tim Bezbachenko. He's been around this league for a while. Great context. And obviously, he's done great things both with TFC and now with Columbus. They face off against RSL at 10 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday on ESPN Plus. They still have three more games until Cucho Hernandez is available because the transfer window opens on July 7th. And Charlie, I think it stood out that it feels like there aren't going to be maybe a lot more names besides Cucho that they'll be introducing in that transfer window.
No, I think after that conversation, we learned that Columbus Crew feel pretty good with the rest of their squad. They think Aiden Morris has really turned a corner and is starting to find his form after recovering from his injury, season-ending injury from last year. So I think that this is a group that has some hope now. And, you know, I was part of that 2014 Revs team where we brought in one player in Jermaine Jones. What a player he was. But it raised the game of everyone else. And so maybe Cucho Hernandez is that player that gets everybody to play at a higher level. Lucas El Rayan, Darlington Nagbe, and Aiden Morris in particular, if they're all firing in the form of their career, this team is going to be really difficult to beat because they can keep the ball. They have those players to keep possession. They also can hit you on set pieces and counterattack. So if Cucho Hernandez comes in and starts lighting the league on setting the league on fire, this Crew team is going to start marching up that Eastern Conference. So it was pretty evident that Tim Bezbachenko is very confident in the rest of the group and that they'll rise to the level.
And he was saying too, there are a couple of games behind most teams in the Eastern Conference. So they've got a couple of games in hand. The things that I took out of that too, the conversation, and Charlie, you were mentioning it, is Cucho needs to connect with someone. And I think who better than Lucas El Rayan? Their relationship is going to be number one, the most important thing, whether this is going to be a successful signing or not, because he's going to score a lot of goals if him and Lucas are fast friends. But also, I don't know if it was in this conversation of earlier in the week where Bez was saying it could be Cucho and Lucas up top in a 3-5-2. So then you're almost eliminating the winger spots where it's been a little bit of a struggle for the Crew. They played a 3-5-2 over the weekend. Then you have Santos and Moreira as wingbacks. And you have Kevin Molino as the 10. Lucas can drop underneath as like a dual 10 at times too, underneath Cucho. That's a pretty nasty looking lineup when you think about it.
It's what we saw this weekend. Obviously not all those pieces available, but they worked on it, and you wonder, one, they had no left backs, but two, was there an idea for Caleb Porter of let's start working on this now, maybe before Cucho gets here? So a big one for them this weekend. RSL riding high, second in the Western Conference. So a big game for them. They have been dominant at home. Charlie's got the crest on. I think they're 6-0-1 at Rio Tinto so far this season. So it has been a house of horrors for teams Respect. Going on the road. Let's get into our weekend preview. We've already talked about a number of the games so far. The national TV, everything gets started on Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern time with Seattle hosting KC on ABC. But let's move one more to DC United facing off against Nashville SC, 5 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN and ESPN Deportes on Saturday. And let's sort of try and dig into this transfer drama overall that DC United is dealing with. We had heard for weeks that Sonny Kittel, a Bundesliga 2 player with Hamburg, a number 10, I think he had 16 assists last season in the second Bundesliga, was on his way. And then I'm seeing reports that he both failed his medical and chose to not come to DC and go back to Hamburg. Either way, that move falls apart. And then Steve Goff puts out yesterday that DC United completes a transfer for Chilean attacker Martin Rodriguez from Alte in the Turkish Superliga. They were relegated, so he had a release clause come up. A 27-year-old, he's got 12 caps for Chile. He played in Liga MX for 4 years, where he had 9 goals, 16 assists. Tough yeah. one right there. And almost 100 appearances. It sounded like a Liga MX team and Colo-Colo were the ones fighting for him. He will come to DC United, it sounds like, as a TAM player that'll be available as of July 7th. Where do we stand on what DC is right now? It sounds like Edson Flores is on his way out. Sonny Kittel, we thought was going to be the replacement. He's not. Paul Arriola obviously is not there. Do you have any confidence that DC United can turn things around in this transfer window?
Completely. Turn things around completely.
To a playoff spot?
I think they could improve. And when you're bringing a player in, that could help balance a team a little bit more, because Julian Gressel is one of the best wingers in this league, right? He's going to create from one of the sides. And if you have someone to balance it on the other side, and you bring someone who then now you have to watch out for both sides of the field, and then Taxi has good combinations with both of them and he can play a little bit more centrally, I think that could be a good look for DC. But I don't know if they'll completely turn it around, but it's a step in the right direction.
They are fifth worst in goals scored in Major League Soccer. So it's a huge problem for them. It's a huge part of what's gone wrong for them. But they also haven't been perfect defensively at the same time. So a lot to improve for them going up against a Nashville team that is looking to bounce back off that loss to Sporting KC. Reminder, Nashville does have an Open Cup quarterfinal midweek for them to sort of focus on as well. So we'll see how that affects them for this matchup. Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time on Unimas, Tudiene, and Twitter. Houston Dynamo hosts the Chicago Fire. Two teams, Jordan, that I think came into this year at a similar level of it's a new project. Shaqiri on one side, Ace Ace we haven't seen yet on the other side. There is, you know, some hope. There's a future that they're building towards. Where we stand right now, which of these two projects do you feel either is farther along or do you have more belief in going forward?
And I like that I added that little random question in earlier in the conversation to Charlie to get his thoughts too on Chicago. But I think Houston is in front of Chicago when you talk about what this new project looks for Nagamura and Ezra Hendrickson for Chicago. So I do think Houston, they're just a couple of points out of playoffs and they are getting results, and it's not every single week, but Chicago sits bottom of the table in the East, and that isn't a good look for them. So got their first win in too many games. So I do think Houston is at a better place. When you're talking about this year, how long-term are we talking about this build and this turnaround? But, you know, I think maybe in the future, if Chicago can keep Hendrickson and keep building off of some of these players that they have, they might get there, but I don't know if it's going to be this year.
I would just say this season has not been good for Chicago Fire. Defensively at times, and Gago Sonino has been one of the standouts. He had a few games where I don't think his mind was all in it with, you know, all this transfer rumors, all of the U.S. men's national team polling.
Guys on Extra Time Radio saying he should start at the Azteca. Commitment.
I don't know who you're talking about saying that. but I will say the kid's gifted and he holds himself accountable and he's professional. So I give him a lot of credit for his maturity at such a young age. And the future's bright for him. We know that. So I think they do have a star and they know he's going to be sold. But you got to stick with Ezra Hendrickson because, you know, he had two full seasons at Minnesota, Adrian Heath, and they were bad. So you kind of have to get through the bad, allow him to learn and grow and develop because that's the choice you made. We're going to go with him. You brought in a big time DP, hasn't really, I think, excelled in the way that you had hoped, but there are those adjustment periods, getting used to the team, getting used to the league, figuring out what success is here versus EPL and Bundesliga. So I think there will be a time where Shaqiri starts to get going, but Chicago are at most times dreadful to watch, and so I think it's going to take some time to get up to speed. And for Houston, I love what Paolo Nakamura has done. There's a different vibe around the Houston Dynamo. You bring in Ace. Hector Herrera is one of those players who adds quality to the team, mm-hmm. no doubt. Does he get them over the hump? I don't think so. I think it's a quality player, raises the level, but in terms of, you know, winning an MLS Cup, I think they still need to add a player Wingers. Too. So I'm happy with the signing. I think it's a clear indication to Houston, the supporters, but also to the league that Houston's for real. You don't make that type of signing if you're not serious. And so that's got to be encouraging for the players in the locker room, but also the supporters that Houston's moving in the right direction. And I think Paolo Nakamura has been a coach that has come in and done pretty well considering, you know, it's his first season. So Pat Onstad behind the scenes is I think they've formed a good partnership. So for Houston, I think this is a pretty big game because you've had some good results this year, but you know, before you get Hector Herrera in the lineup, you want to have some momentum, and I think mm-hmm. they have done that.
Trying to hang around the playoff line as Ace prepares to come into the league, announcing, I believe yesterday, that they're going to turn all the lower bowl seats into mesh seats to make it a little bit cooler in the stadium. That's feeling, nice. As well as some indoor cold space. So the new ownership group,
that's similar to what we're seeing has, right?
With Charlie's RSL. I don't know what Austin does, but it's like magical.
Their seats look
it is
mesh.
So cool in that
yeah.
stadium.
Are they not?
That might be what it is. I thought it said somewhere that Houston would be the first oh. one in the country or something okay. like that, but I could be making that up as well. To close out the night on national TV, San Jose hosting LA Galaxy, Cali Classico, mm-hmm. baby. 10 p.m. Eastern time on Unimas, 2DNA, and Twitter in English. This game always delivers. And we have a question here from Mike Kleeman on Twitter. Charlie, I'll pose it to you first. What would make the San Jose Earthquakes more relevant within MLS? Signing our first $5 to $10 million DP, or finally selling a player onto Europe for $5 to $10 million? Of all the legacy MLS clubs, San Jose is the only one to not have yet make a splash by selling a big player on.
I'll jump at this first. For me, it would be buying a player at mm-hmm. that level, because I think that shakes the conversation around the league, around San Jose and their intention / ambition. If I'm a senior player and I've played in this league or I've been a professional for a number of years, I want my club to show that intention that we're trying to win, and we're trying to win soon, not 10 or 15 years down the road, that we're trying to win now. And so I think for San Jose, there's been a lot of talk around the ambition of the club post, you know, the wonder years with Landon Donovan as an Earthquake. And you know, once they moved to Houston, that team has not been the same. You know, you've had little spurts with Wando, but in terms of really saying, hey, we're going to go out and sign some big talented players and kind of move, it doesn't have to be big name DPs, but it's got to be, you know, DPs that are young, who are hungry, and who are determined to shine and develop. So I think for me, that's what's going to take San Jose out of the yeah. minnow discussion.
And I think the question was around, like, MLS originals or old like teams that have been around.
Legacy.
Yeah. Teams. And yeah. I'm trying to think about who has sold players to Europe from their academy. You know, right away, San Jose, I'm thinking Cade Cowell, how can you get him sold? But a lot of those teams that I'm thinking that come to mind right away have bought a player before they've sold a player, because then that ups the level of your entire squad. You're competing day in and day out versus players that are going to make you get better. Therefore, those young players are growing at an exponential rate. And so I do think with Charlie, you have to buy someone. And then that's only going to enhance your selling capabilities, because more eyeballs are going to be on you because you have this big player.
I think you're both right. I still think more likely is the sale because Cade Cowell, Jeremy Abobasi, JT Marcinkowski, and Cruz Medina. I know he's already trained at Bayern Munich, chose to sign a homegrown deal. He's young. He's not going to play yet, but that's one of those players we're already seeing in those conversations. Either way, this is going to be a fun one. We had Jeremy Abobasi on the show on Tuesday, so go back and listen to that one if you missed it. Talked a lot about this new coaching staff under Alex Covello, working with Chris Wondolowski, sort of how this team's coming together. He sounded hopeful. He sounded positive, and he's pouring in goals, leading the Golden Boot.
Why do you have to be such a Debbie Downer and be like, hey, you know what? San Jose fans, no hope in the future, because actually – The successful players that you do have, you're going to sell them.
That's not Debbie Downer.
It is.
You're celebrating.
You want to be winning.
Wait, you're out here being like, look at what the Revs did with Tejan Buchanan and Matt Turner. Selling doesn't mean that you're bad.
I didn't say anything. Now you said it. You talked about an MLS original team.
We celebrate Brendan Aaronson. We celebrate Ricardo Pepi. We celebrate Brian Reynolds, okay. Chris Richards.
Yeah,
celebrating all these things.
But those teams are actually signing teams and competing. If you sell Cade Cowell and Jeremy Abobasi in particular, what does this team have left? Nada. They have nada. And you're telling me you're just going to play kids? What does that do for a player like Jan Gregusz? You know, I would be gutted. Because that means we're just going to be a club that's going to develop young talent, and it's going to take us another 5 to 10 years to compete as
Charlie,
this player.
Time next year, Jan Gregusz is going to be in Nantucket next to you, not playing
I'm
for
just
the San
saying,
Jose.
I'm just
Earthquake.
Saying.
It's almost happy hour.
An example. Yeah, come on.
Those are national television games. Let's hit our ESPN Plus games of the week before we get out of here. Jordan, you go first because you got the best game maybe of the weekend. What is your ESPN Plus game?
I do think I have the best game of the weekend. I'm taking Austin versus Dallas, third and fourth in the West. This is going to be a good one. And Austin has yet to beat Dallas. Doesn't that sound weird to say? And both of these teams, minus Dallas really over the last couple of games, I think maybe just especially now with Hedges, is he going to be available and how much that stabilizes them to then go and attack and build off of that. But they can be a handful. Dallas can, and so can Austin. So this is going to be a good one in the hot, hot Texas heat.
Charlie, let's keep rolling through with you. What's your ESPN Plus game of the weekend?
You already know. Toronto hosting Atlanta United. Toronto, they lost in their last league game to New York Red Bulls on the road, 2-0. And it wasn't pretty from Toronto's side. You know, I feel like at times Toronto keeps possession, but it's not dangerous. And if you're playing New York Red Bulls, you know you can't keep possession in your own half. You can't take, you know, chances. It's got to be a certain type of game to break that initial pressure, and then it's yours. Then the game is yours. But you have to be smart in the buildup. You have to be smart with possession. Otherwise, they're going to eat you alive. So I'm really interested to see them. And then Atlanta United, it seems like they're starting to turn the page. Joseph Martinez gets 90 minutes at the starting at the nine. You know, Luis Araujo, he scores a goal. He sets up Joseph Martinez to get his confidence going. You know, get Thiago Almada back from a red card. Moreno, he's in the midfield. I feel like the dynamic within that team and the attacking third is starting to improve. They're starting to have that belief. Guys are starting to get healthy. I'm interested to see how Atlanta look that after winning 2-0 to Inter Miami. Of course, Inter Miami picked up a red card, but this could be a great opportunity to get them going again. And if Atlanta United starts to, you know, Luis Araujo is a special mm-hmm. player. Mm-hmm. If they can get going in Almada mm-hmm. and Joseph Martinez and the ball can start moving, that's going to be a team yeah. to watch, especially come end of the summer into the fall.
Almada still suspended. It was a 3-game suspension for him. I think only one of them has been played, and obviously the two signings already made for Atlanta. My ESPN Plus game of the week, the final game of the weekend on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, the Vancouver Whitecaps hosting the New England Revolution. Can the Whitecaps use this Canadian championship momentum? Over the last 10 games, they have led MLS in points that they have picked up as they push for a playoff spot. Can Cavallini and White do it together rather than just individually, which we saw last year for White and this year for Cavallini? Let's close out in the mailbag with Sharon Hardgrove, who says, do you think any contenders will seek to add MLS veteran depth? And if so, who could be on the move over the summer? I put together a list of names, so you guys can jump out if you have any names you want to push. Otherwise, I can start to roll through these. Does anyone come to mind off the bat?
So who are we calling contenders? Because I feel like that makes it important to say. Because
we know who the contenders are.
How many are we listing?
You can pick whoever you want. I'll throw out some of the names I thought of first. I didn't come with teams as much, and I looked at rosters around MLS and sort of who would be available, who's an MLS veteran, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So Darwin Serén was one that came to mind. As Ache comes in, he's a guy who can be around a starting lineup. I'm always going to bring up Jackson Mendez. Please trade him, Orlando. You have no use for him. You do not play him. He could be a starter for Ecuador at the World Cup. So those were two that come up as central midfielders. I don't know who you would put looking for those players, although João Paulo is out for the year. I don't know if you guys have heard. So that could be one that one team that might make a move like that.
What about New England with Mendes?
I don't think Darwin Serén is the answer to anyone's problems in terms of being a championship team.
I like the shout for Mendes too.
New England needs help defensively in the midfield position. I don't think neither of those. You need more of a hard-nosed six, a ball winner.
I think Mendes
next to Polster could be that guy. Yeah,
I think he doesn't have the tactical discipline, to be honest.
I
think he could develop into that, but right now I don't think that's the player you would bring in.
I remember last year on MLS Assist, I called for Atlanta to get Mendes because they needed us help in the six, and I got rocked because it was Orlando at like. which is fair. So funny, but I've been calling for Mendes to find a new spot too, because I do think I think it's difficult to he's never really been paired up. I mean, I guess with Urso at times he's been with another player who can win the ball, but I do think he's underutilized and he could help. I don't know, I kind of like that shout to go to, but would he go
Galaxy?
Galaxy could use him.
Yeah. The Galaxy definitely could use another center mid. I have a couple center forwards on this list. I think one maybe of Sergio Santos or Corey Burke, as well as Ola Kamara. Mm. And then when I think of teams, I think Montreal's a big one that comes to mind as could be a contender if they improve that center forward position. We know Nashville has had problems at that center forward position. And we've seen Dallas use Frank O'Hara and Jesus Ferreira more recently. Can you upgrade on Frank O'Hara, though? Maybe one of those players could be an option there. And then some of the bigger names with contracts ending that we've talked about for trades, Alejandro Pozuelo and Daniel Shalloway have been two that we've bounced around on this podcast a couple of times.
Yes. We've heard how many times Galaxy getting Pozuelo at that 10 spot, you know, with Vanny. But you also have to consider Pozuelo on the defensive side of the ball, off the ball. Because you look at some of the primetime players, and if they don't give you anything defensively, what does the shape look like? And I don't think the Galaxy can necessarily have that luxury player right now, because they need a lot of help defensively, especially winning the ball back right away for those transition moments. So I don't think Pozuelo would be the right answer for. I think he definitely helped, but I think in terms of like championship team, probably not the best signing. But Shalloway is an interesting one. That's a player that you sign to try and win now, knowing that maybe you only have 6 months And what would you be willing to give up to get a player for 6 months? You know, I think probably, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, it would probably have to be a lot now because Sporting KC has an Open Cup semifinal to play, and he scored two of their goals in the Open Cup quarterfinals. That's all for us here today. There's one trade, by the way, that I'm going to speak into existence. Tim Parker to St. Louis for next year because Bradley Carnell, that connection, they need a center back. Wow. But we'll get to that another day.
Well done. That's New York Red Bulls 2 right there. Info.
Who knew? Who knew we were talking St. Louis SC City Football Club, whatever going on at the end of this show. So thank you to Tim Bezvichenko for joining us. Thank you to Jordan Angeli for filling in. Thank you to Charlie Davies for kicking off the boat shoes for a solid hour and coming and being with us here from Nantucket. We'll be back on Monday, of course, with more extra time to review the weekend and talk about everything that's still going on. MLS action next week, midweek action, as well as Open Cup. So we've got a ton to discuss coming up. Congrats to the Columbus Crew for making that big signing. And good luck to everyone this weekend. Enjoy the soccer, and we'll be back again next week.